good evening, everyone. This is Lou Carvalho, and we're bringing you the Divided Kingdom radio show. Well, here we are at the end of summer. Not the actual calendar end of summer. That's still a few weeks away, but the unofficial end of summer. The beach traffic is dying down here on the Eastern Shore, although it'll still be pretty fierce on the weekends for a few more weekends to come. Most kids are back in school now. Some were back last week, but even the rest are just about all back. So, what's going on in the world? Many things. Let's begin with something that's been in the news a lot lately. This particular guy who is a illegal immigrant, and they've had all kinds of things. First, they're going to deport him. Then they can't. Then they can. So this is from The Hill by Sarah Fortinsky, September 1st, 2025. Nome accuses CBS of deceptively editing interview about Abrego Garcia. Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem accused CBS News of selectively editing footage from her Sunday interview, cutting some of her remarks about Kilmar Abrego Garcia, the Salvadoran national, who was mistakenly deported and then returned to the U.S. to face separate charges. In a statement on Sunday, the Department of Homeland Security, DHS, said CBS, quote, deceptively, unquote, edited the secretary's answers, cutting about 4 minutes from the nearly 17-minute interview when it aired on CBS News' Face the Nation. And here we have a quote by Kristi Noem. This morning I joined CBS to report the facts about Kilmar Abrego Garcia. Instead, CBS shamefully edited the interview to whitewash the truth about this MS-13 gang member and the threat he poses to American public safety, unquote. CBS News, however, maintains that the interview was edited to fit its allotted time slot in the hour-long broadcast, and that the full interview was published online. Well, that may be true. This is Lou speaking now. I'm going to interject a few things. First of all, those who watch TV probably don't bother to listen to it online if they've already heard it on TV. I wouldn't. I would assume I'm getting the most important sections and that it's not worth my time to hear it all over again with maybe a few additions online. So I think that's a little ingenuous on the part of CBS. But reading on, here's a quote that a spokesperson for CBS told The Hill. Quote, Secretary Noem's Face the Nation interview was edited for time and met all CBS News standards. The entire interview is publicly available on YouTube, and the full transcript was posted early Sunday morning at cbsnews.com. Unquote. Noem's accusation is the latest example of the administration's ongoing feud with CBS and its parent company, Paramount. Earlier this summer, Paramount agreed to pay $16 million to settle a lawsuit with President Trump over claims the news outlet favorably edited a 60-minute interview with former Vice President Kamala Harris, his Democratic opponent, in the 2024 election. So, again, let me interrupt. Just goes to show that this is not the first time CBS has done something like this. And they're going to claim, oh, it was only because of the time factor. Well, is that the only part of the interview they could find to cut out to bring it down to the allotted time? I don't know. It doesn't ring true to me. But I'm no authority. But reading on, in Noem's Sunday interview, sections of her responses cut for the live broadcast included allegations against Abrego. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that right. I'm not much in Spanish. I'll say Abrego Garcia. Allegations that have not been substantiated and which his lawyers deny. Those allegations that the Maryland resident, quote, was a known human smuggler, MS-13 gang member, an individual who was a wife beater, and someone who was so perverted that he solicited nude photos from minors and even his fellow human traffickers, told him to knock it off. And those are the words of Kristi Noem that she said in the section of the interview that DHS claims was removed from the live broadcast. Now, I tend to think, and this is, again, Lou speaking, I tend to think this article is rather critical. I'm not too familiar with The Hill. I should read up on it. I've certainly heard of it. I tend to think this is a somewhat left-wing, left-of-center approach to the whole matter. Because it gives a lot of disclaimers about, you know, the lawyers of radio saying, you know, he's going to get a fair trial, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm not going to read the whole thing. But if you do want to read it, you can easily get it. It's, again, at The Hill publication on September 1st, 2025, Monday, September 1st. And the title is Noem, N-O-E-M, accuses CBS of deceptively editing interview about Abrego Garcia. And as far as I know, that is still up in the air, whether he's to be deported or not. A couple of left-wing judges have intervened and say he's supposed to get a fair trial, or at least a hearing, before they can deport him. Well, that may go to the Supreme Court, because I don't think Donald Trump is going to sit still and just let that go by. Now, in a somewhat related article on Fox News, also September 1st, we had this headline. DHS rages over what it calls a NYT, that's New York Times, quote, sob story, unquote, about convicted Jamaican murderer deported by Trump. This is by Emma Busey and Bill Malugin of Fox News, again on September 1st, 2025. The Department of Homeland Security, DHS, has blasted the New York Times for its reporting on a convicted Jamaican murderer who was deported by the Trump administration in July. The Times ran its headline as, "The man who'd served his time in the U.S. is deported to an African prison." The first sentence of the article explained how Orville Etoria had shot and killed a man in Brooklyn nearly 30 years ago. And here we have a quote that was posted on by DHS Monday. The quote says, "Disgraceful and disgusting. The failing New York Times is peddling another disgusting sob story for a criminal illegal alien. Orville Etoria was convicted of murder. It is absolutely revolting that the New York Times is actively defending convicted murderers over American citizens. DHS will continue enforcing the law at full speed without apology," unquote. And it says, DHS reported this in a post on X on Monday, accusing the publication, that is the New York Times, of downplaying the seriousness of Etoria's horrific 1996 crime. Etoria was sentenced to 25 years in prison, up to life imprisonment, and given a deportation order in 2009. As well as murder, DHS has said Etoria's criminal history included armed robbery, possession of a weapon, and forcible theft. During his sentence at Sing Sing Correctional Facility in New York, Etoria earned a bachelor's degree via the Hudson Blink program at Mercy College and graduated in 2018. He also pursued a master's in divinity. After he was released in 2021, the Biden administration allowed him to remain in the U.S. so long as he checked in with ICE and despite the standing deportation order. This summer, the Trump administration ordered Etoria to be deported to Eswatini, a small southern African country where he's not a citizen. In July, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security announced the deportation of five deportees from Vietnam, Laos, Cuba, and Yemen, including Etoria. And DHS spokesperson Tricia McLaughlin wrote an X at the time, quote, A safe third country deportation flight to Eswatini in southern Africa has landed. This flight took individuals so uniquely barbaric that their home countries refused to take them back. These depraved monsters had been terrorizing American communities, she continued, adding that they are now off of American soil. DHS said Jamaica and other countries refused to accept Eswatini, though Jamaican officials have since disputed that claim. And here we have a quote also from the DHS in a statement to Fox News Digital, quote, Orville Etoria, an illegal alien from Jamaica, is a convicted murderer. 16 years later, this murderer is off our streets and out of our country. President Trump and Secretary Noem are using every tool available to get criminal illegal aliens out of American communities and out of the country. That, again, was a statement by DHS to Fox News Digital. And this appeared in Fox News, September 1st, 2025. All right. Now, we move from the criminality to the absurd. This was interesting and shocking. Well, I went to college, like many of you, and I can remember taking some pretty tough courses. Got pretty good grades. Nothing to be ashamed of. Naturally, some courses were more interesting than others, but I sure don't remember any courses like what you're about to hear. The headline reads, NYC College students learning, quote, how to steal, unquote, as the class teaches, quote, line between private property and public good is drawn in blood, unquote. This is by Ricky, R-I-K-K-I, Schlott, S-C-H-L-O-T-T, and was published September 2nd, 2025. The value of a college degree has been called into question lately, and for good reason. Parents might be shocked to learn what they're paying for. At the new school in Manhattan, a four-year private university, where the $60,240 tuition doesn't cover housing, students of the university's Eugene Lang College of Liberal Arts can learn, quote, how to steal, unquote. And it has a quotation quoted word for word. Actually, it's a photocopy, screenshot, whatever you want to call it, of one of their classes. The title of the class is indeed How to Steal. And it's a four-credit course, and it gives you an exact statement, word for word, the way a student would read this, of the course summary. Now, going on with the article, this class is worth 4 credits and explores, and this is an exact quote now, explores the politics, ethics, and aesthetics of theft, complete with field trips. Noting the sociology seminar is not about petty crime, the course catalog explains it is an exploration of, quote, the politics, ethics, and aesthetics of theft in a world where accumulation is sacred, dispossession is routine, and the line between private property and public good is drawn in blood, unquote. It includes field trips to, quote, places where capital is hoarded, capital is hoarded and value is contested, unquote, like museums, banks, even grocery stores. I guess it's fitting in New York, where shoplifting loot worth less than $1,000 is a mere misdemeanor. Locals don't even bat an eye anymore at the sight of someone walking out of CVS with whatever they want. How to Steal, again, that's the course name, includes field work at, quote, places where capital is hoarded and value is contested, unquote, like museums, banks, and even grocery stores. All right, let me interrupt a minute. This is Lou speaking. I didn't realize that a museum was a place where capital is hoarded. That's a pretty far out way to put it. Value is contested. Well, maybe grocery stores it is contested. If I start to walk out of my local grocery store, I think they'll contest it. Maybe that's what they're talking about. Maybe they think that, like an old friend of mine who had some mental problems, he used to say, you shouldn't have to pay for food. Food should be free because it's necessary. Well, I guess we'd all like that, except the grocery stores. I don't think they'd like that too much. They'd go broken a day. Well, back to the article. The course catalog proudly declares that the class is a look at, quote, radical ethics, unquote, and asks, is it possible to steal back what was already stolen? Unquote. And the author says, like our city's sense of right and wrong. And get this. It's a four-credit course, meaning this class alone will cost students or their parents an eye-watering $10,040. And things are just as ridiculous at the Ivy League schools. Columbia University has an entire course dedicated to the fictitious HBO series Game of Thrones as a way to study empires. It satisfies the global core component of the school's notoriously rigorous core curriculum. Princeton offers Gaming Blackness, the anthropology of video games and race, which uses gameplay for an, quote, experience-based exploration of video games in a global age, unquote. Well, this is Lou again. I think you get the picture here. These are not the courses I had a chance to take when I was in college. Of course, that was a few years back. Now, let me see. Moving on. The class, and this is the one at Princeton, teaches how video games utilize, now that word is in quotes, utilize race and expose the intersectionality. Now, there's a new word for me. Intersectionality. I'm going to have to look that one up, of class, gender, and sexuality. Those last three or four words are in quotes. The intersectionality of class, gender, and sexuality. It's hard to imagine an application outside of campus gates, but it could be helpful for those planning to return to academia to teach their own absurdity. How about Yale? Yale's, quote, Bad Bunny, Musical Aesthetics and Politics, unquote, apparently now fulfills the school's humanities and arts requirement. Whatever happened to the Odyssey? Unsurprisingly, there are plenty of classes that push nonsensical progressive orthodoxy, like one at Brown University called Prison Abolition as Policy. And again, this is Lou speaking. I think that fellow who is running for the mayor of New York wants to get rid of prisons. I heard that somewhere. That's a hard name to pronounce. Mamdani, I think is his name. Seems to me he was big on getting rid of prisons. Let them all out. Those are my words, not his. I'll have to look that up and see if I'm right about that. And back to the article, students help provide policy recommendations and are encouraged to create TikToks about the issue. NYU, that's New York University, meanwhile, offers all sorts of intersectionality-laden courses, such as indigenous, now this is in quotes, indigenous and Latinx speculative film and fiction, queer cultures, and disability and sexuality in American culture. Let me read that one again for my own information. Disability and sexuality in American culture. I wonder what that means. Well, going on with the article. To put this in perspective, Columbia's tuition is 96,000 $260 a year. NYU costs $96,988. Brown is even more expensive at $97,284. Imagine owing nearly $400,000 in debt because you studied, let's say, Taylor Swift and Her World. An actual option offered to Harvard students last year. I just have to stop and wonder as I read this. Harvard, the nation's oldest university. Well, shouldn't be too hard to get a degree there anymore. Back to the article. When courses like these count toward degrees at our most prestigious schools, is it any wonder people are questioning the practical worth of higher education? Some 23% of Americans say they have very little or no faith in higher education. Another 33% merely have some, according to a 2025 Gallup poll. Even more damning, more than half of Zoomer graduates view their degrees as a waste of money, per a March Indeed survey. New York University, which offers a host of courses concerned with intersectionality, costs nearly $97,000 a year in tuition. Now, I'm not sure about that. That may mean that doesn't include room and board or meals. That may just be tuition. I'll have to look that one up. Well, let me jump down just a little bit here. Here's a good paragraph. An analysis of more than a million syllabi at American universities between 2008 and 2020 found that Karl Marx was more likely to be assigned to students than William Shakespeare or Plato, French postmodernist Michel Foucault, top Enlightenment thinkers Immanuel Kant and John Locke. Novelist Toni Morrison's name was more prevalent than those of Aristotle, political economist John Stuart Mill, Frederick Douglass, and Niccolo Machiavelli. There's nothing wrong with assigning Morrison and other modern authors, but the classics shouldn't be tossed aside to make way for the modern authors. Young people need a grasp of the texts and ideas that make Western civilization great. And let me skip down just a little bit in the interest of time. And the concluding paragraph is pretty good. It says, exorbitantly expensive schools are high on their own supply, yet they don't see why the outside world is suspicious of them and the value of their diplomas. How is an employer supposed to know whether you read the classics and took calculus or played video games and dissected Bad Bunny lyrics? Well, pretty shocking. Things have changed since I was in school. All right, now I'm going to shift gears. But first, let me just say, if you'd like to write to us, you can write to me, Lou Caverly. Can you spell that? C-A-V-E-R-L-Y, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland. And the zip code is 21609. That's Lou Caverly, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And you'll want to visit our website, DividedKingdomRadio.com. That's DividedKingdomRadio.com. And as far as I know, the archives are up and running. I'll check them out later today and make sure. I always enjoy letters. We can always use a little contribution, too, to keep the show running. We have to pay the cost of the show, or I should say now that Elizabeth is no longer with us, I have to pay the cost of the show. And thankfully, we have a lot of very faithful listeners who help us keep it going. So if you could write to us, it would be great. I'll get that address later in the show. So if you didn't get it yet, get a pencil and paper handy. And again, we still have a few more of our books about the COVID. That's becoming another issue because we're getting into the flu season. and probably the COVID season. So if you'd like a copy of the book Elizabeth and I wrote a couple years back, COVID and Coming Chaos, I will send it to you at no charge. It'll be a help if you can just cover the postage, maybe a $5 bill, and just write to me. I'll give that address again in a few minutes. And just say, please send me a copy of your book. I'll be glad to do that. Now we're going to jump to the Washington Times. Just this morning, I was listening to the radio. Mr. Pritzker, the governor of Illinois, was having a fit about President Trump's threat to send federal troops into Chicago because of all the killing there. Of course, he doesn't seem to be able to stop the killing. He can only just criticize the prisoner. So let's see what this says. Trump could use Insurrection Act to send troops to Chicago, Baltimore, other cities. This is by Alex Sawyer, The Washington Times, Monday, September 1st, 2025. Democratic leaders have opposed President Trump's deployment of the National Guard to restore order in Los Angeles and fight crime in the District of Columbia. But legal experts say the Insurrection Act of 1807 authorizes him to do so. The issue has borne scrutiny recently as Mr. Trump has threatened to send troops to Baltimore, Chicago, and New York against Democratic resistance and criticism. And said John Yoo, Y-O-O, a law professor at University of California, Berkeley, quote, from his authority to use the military to defend federal installations, personnel, and operations, the exact same grounds that he invoked to send the military into Los Angeles and which were upheld by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, unquote. The Insurrection Act allows Mr. Trump to deploy the Guard as long as one of three conditions is met. One, request from a state's governor. Two, enforce federal law when it's being obstructed. Or three, protecting constitutional rights when the states are unwilling or unable to do so. Daniel Pye, a law professor at the University of New Hampshire, said in an email. And Mr. Pye continued, so if Trump wants to federalize the National Guard or deploy other military to the states, one of these three conditions must be satisfied. And he continued, now it's a fraught enterprise trying to predict what the Trump administration will do next. But I think most likely they would allege that condition two is satisfied if they federalize the National Guard or send other troops into the states. And condition two, I'm rereading it, enforce federal law when it's being obstructed. One would think that would fit because these sanctuary states and cities are opposing federal law. To me, it seems simple, but I'm no lawyer. Now, back to the article. Critics of Mr. Trump's deployments have decried the use of troops to enforce local laws, sometimes citing the Posse Comitatus Act of 1878, barring the military from acting in domestic situations without the expressed consent of a state's governor. However, under the Insurrection Act, the president was allowed to deploy the California National Guard to Los Angeles in June to protect federal buildings and personnel during anti-immigration protests, legal experts say. The Trump administration also has cited Title 10 of the U.S. Code, Section 12406, Part 3, to justify the deployment. Mr. Yu said, this right of the president under the Constitution to use the military to protect the federal institutions was first recognized by the Supreme Court in 1890. And Mr. Yu added that Mr. Trump could also argue that people or conspiracies are obstructing the enforcement of federal law. He went on, this would allow the deployment of the military under the Insurrection Act. In these cases, the military would not be acting to make arrests for violations of the criminal law, but to restore law and order and end the efforts to block federal law, he said. What's more, the Posse Comitatus Act does not apply to the D.C. National Guard because the district is not a state and the president can exercise direct control of the local troops. And that was said by William Banks, professor at Syracuse University School of Law. And Mr. Banks also noted that the Home Rule Act of 1973, the federal law granting D.C. officials autonomy in local governance, allows the president to assume command of the city police force and National Guard. And Mr. Trump activated the D.C. National Guard on August 7th. If Mr. Trump would have tried to deploy troops in a state without a governance request, as he did in Los Angeles, the president must cite the federal interest in doing so under the Insurrection Act, Mr. Banks added. And this is a quote from Mr. Banks. He would have to spell it out. That is a pretty tough thing to do with street crime. It goes on everywhere. It's not extraordinary. Unquote. Mr. Pye said the Trump administration could try to make the argument that the state is allowing for the obstruction of federal law to take place. Mr. Trump's administration has cited federal law, Title 10 of the U.S. Code. Again, that's number 124.06.3. To deploy the Guard. Under that statute, a president may deploy the Guard if there's an invasion, rebellion, or if regular forces cannot enforce the law. Once again, that was in the Washington Times, Monday, September 1st, 2025, by Alex Swoyer, S-W-O-Y-E-R. And a little bit more on this whole matter of crime. Even some of the left-wingers are beginning to see that the Democrats are in trouble if they don't do something about crime. But all too long, there just has been a hands-off attitude by governors and mayors in these big Democratic cities and states. So here's something from WorldNet Daily, and it says, even Morning Joe is turning against Pritzker for defying Trump on a response to rampant crime. Pritzker is the governor of Illinois. And the subtitle, these are the most dangerous parts of my state, where we'd love to figure out how to have a partnership that's constitutional to respect the sort of balance of federalism. And let's work together to save lives. This is by Nicole Silverio. And it came from the Daily Caller News Foundation, September 2nd. 2025. Panelists on MSNBC's Morning Joe called for Democratic Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker to work with President Donald Trump to stop crime in his state after more violence occurred in Chicago. At least 54 people were shot and 7 people died in Chicago over Labor Day weekend, according to NBC5 Chicago. While Trump has floated the idea of sending National Guard troops to Chicago, Morning Joe host Joe Scarborough criticized Democrat Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson and Pritzker, Governor J.B. Pritzker, for doing nothing about the persistent violent crime that has taken place in the city for years. And this is a quote from Scarborough. You know, I actually think that J.B. Pritzker should do something radical. I think she should pick up the phone, call the president, and say, you know, and I know, you don't have to have the constitutional authority to deploy the National Guard here. You can do that in D.C. You can't. I might have read that wrong. The governor said, you know, and I know, you don't have the constitutional authority to deploy the National Guard here. You can do that in D.C. You can't do that in Chicago. But let's partner up. These are the most dangerous parts of my state. We would love to figure out how to have a partnership that's constitutional, that respects the sort of balance of federalism. So let's work together to save lives. Now, that's what Joe Scarborough said, the governor of Illinois ought to be saying. He ought to be doing, calling the president and asking for help. But just today, I heard the words of the governor, Pritzker, who some say is running for president, although he hasn't said so yet. And what did he say? not that he was going to cooperate with Trump, but he was saying that Trump is doing this so he can circumvent the elections. It's all a plot by Trump, that Trump doesn't care about crime for real. This is what Pritzker says, that Trump is just trying to lay the groundwork to have troops there so he can declare the elections basically null and void. Well, that's pretty far out, and I don't think he has a shred of evidence to back that up. But now back to the article. And this is, again, Joe Scarborough talking. And again, I think this is what he said the governor of Illinois should say to the president. Quote, because right now this sort of, hey, nothing to see here, moving along, no problem here. Hey, Donald Trump, we don't need you. And the mayor talking about, we're going to protect people's dignity in our city. Well, protect their lives. That's protecting their dignity, Scarborough continued. Co-host Willie Geist further said the current violence in Chicago is not unusual and has been happening throughout the city for years. The number of homicides in Chicago reached a 25-year high in 2021, and the number has remained significantly higher than the numbers recorded in the last decade, the Chicago Tribune reporting. Aside from June 2014, no other single month of June has had fewer than 40 murders in Chicago since at least 1970, according to WTTW, a PBS affiliate. Johnson appeared on Morning Joe on August 26th and refused to give a straight answer on whether he would support increasing the police presence on the streets of Chicago. The mayor argued that the city would instead be safer with more affordable housing and mental health services. Pritzker and Johnson have raged at Trump's threats to send the National Guard to Chicago and claimed he would be violating the U.S. Constitution if he takes such an action. They both pleaded with Trump during an August 25th press conference to not come to Chicago and fix the city's crime problem. Johnson also accused Trump on August 11th of spreading misinformation about the crime statistics in Chicago, and that the National Guard's presence would only, quote, undermine, unquote, public safety. If Trump does deploy the National Guard, he would be cracking down on crime in the same way the administration did in Washington, D.C. The current federal takeover of Washington has led to 1,669 arrests and 168 illegal firearm confiscations, Attorney General Pam Bondi confirmed on Tuesday. And Mr. Trump said during an August 22nd Oval Office event, Chicago is a mess. You have an incompetent mayor, grossly incompetent, and we'll straighten out. Let me read that again. You have an incompetent mayor, grossly incompetent, and we'll straighten that one out probably next. That will be our next one after this, and it won't even be tough. And the people in Chicago, Mr. Vice President, are screaming for us to come. Residents of Chicago have rejected the narrative that crime has gone down in the city, with many stating that they do not feel safe in their communities. And again, that was from WorldNet Daily. The title, even Morning Joe, is turning against Pritzker for defying Trump on response to rampant crime, September 2nd, 2025. And I have another article, but since it overlaps a good deal, I won't read all of it. I'll just read a little bit of it. This was on Fox News. Chicago residents beg for more help as crime wreaks havoc on neighborhoods. And let me just give you a few highlights here. Osiris King, a Chicago native living in the South Side, said crime in the city has worsened. These are his words. When I've been growing up, actually, it wasn't really as bad as it is today. When I was growing up back in the early 2000s, it was bad. But the kids nowadays, they're just wreaking havoc in all of the neighborhoods. He went on to say, we didn't play with guns and we didn't listen to drill rap music, like at this very young age. Like, these kids are carrying guns. like around the age of 8 years old, and they're killing other eight-year-old kids with guns. It's insane to me. We need, I'd say, about 10,000 police. Me personally, we do need mental health. Now, here's the thing. If you want to have mental health and have a mental hospital, get these illegals out of here. Dennis White, a former National Guard officer, told Fox News Digital. White added, the shelter that you put these illegals in, use that as a mental hospital so they can get the help they need, so they can be more productive citizens. And just looking down here a little bit, talks a little bit more about Morning Joe Scarborough's interview with the mayor of Chicago, Mr. Johnson, Brandon Johnson. Scarborough asked Johnson, do you believe that the streets of Chicago would be safer if there were more uniformed police officers on the streets? And she says, Scarborough pressed the liberal mayor multiple times, and Johnson emphasized the need for expanded social programs, including affordable housing. And I'm going to stop there with this article because it overlaps a good deal with the others. But you get the gist. That was from Fox News. Chicago residents beg for more help as crime wreaks havoc on neighborhoods. That appeared September 2nd. Tuesday, September 2nd. Now, let's see what we have here. Here is something from the New York Post, a very sad article, but also a warning to us about AI. How ChatGPT fueled the delusional man who killed mom himself in posh Connecticut town. This was by Ariel Zilber, Z-I-L-B-E-R. It appeared August 29, 2025, New York Post. It was a case of murder by algorithm. A disturbed former Yahoo manager killed his mother, then himself, after months of delusional interactions with his AI chatbot, quote, best friend, unquote, which fueled his paranoid belief that his mom was plotting against him, officials said. Stein Erik Solberg, S-O-E-L-B-E-R-G, age 56, allegedly confided his darkest suspicions to the popular ChatGPT artificial intelligence, which he nicknamed Bobby. And he was allegedly egged on to kill by the computer brain's sick responses. This is believed to be the first case of its kind. The chatbot allegedly came up with ways for Solberg to trick the 83-year-old woman and even spun its own crazed conspiracies by doing things such as finding symbols in a Chinese food receipt that it deemed demonic, the Wall Street Journal reported. The chats ensnared Solberg, who once briefly worked for Yahoo, but left the firm more than 20 years ago, and those chats ensnared him into a fatal relationship. Let me skip down a little bit. It has a screenshot of some of the interactions with this chatbot. And it says, Solberg had been living with his elderly mom, Suzanne Everson Adams, a former debutante in her $2.7 million Dutch colonial home when the two were found dead on August 5th. In the months before he snapped, Solberg posted hours of videos showing his ChatGPT conversations on Instagram and YouTube, according to the Wall Street Journal. The exchanges reveal a man with a history of mental illness spiraling deeper into madness, while his AI companion fed his paranoia that he was the target of a grand conspiracy. The AI would repeatedly tell Solberg, who called himself a glitch in the Matrix, that he was sane, the videos show. Well, it goes on, but interesting and disturbing. And it gives some of the examples here. The Police say this is still an active investigation. Lieutenant Tim Kelly, the Greenwich Police Department, told the Post, that would be the New York Post, on Friday. All right. In the interest of time, I think we'll stop there. Again, you can read the whole thing at the New York Post. I'll chat. I want to say GTP, but it's GPT. Fueled delusional man who killed mom himself in posh Connecticut town. By Ariel Silver. And this is not the only such instance. I was hearing about one with a much younger person. It may have been a teenager, although I don't know that. Let's see. May have some of that here. No, I don't think so. But there are a number of such stories, and it is a real puzzle. Just what the liability is for these AI companies. This is a whole new field. Some of the existing laws really don't address. Matters of liability are not clear cut. And it will take court actions and maybe legislation to clear up just who's responsible in a case like this. All right, let's take a little break from the regular articles. One of our intrepid contacts in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts sends me many, many fine articles, and I wish I had more time to share them with you, but I'll give you a few of the most interesting ones. The sheriff of Suffolk County is in trouble. I think I might have mentioned this last week. And Suffolk County, of course, is a big county. It includes Boston, the city of Boston. And Sheriff Steve Tompkins resigned from the Roxbury Community College Board of Trustees, where he serves as chair, days after he was arrested in Florida on charges that he extorted a Boston-based cannabis company. Tompkins offered his formal resignation in a brief Tuesday letter to Governor Mara Healey, after Republicans called on the governor to remove him from the position. This appeared in the Boston Herald. The date was, do we have a date? Yes. This is back a couple weeks, August 14th, 2025, Boston Herald. And there is a big issue up there. Now, how about the illegals? Well, Mayor Wu, W-U, Michelle Wu of Boston, mayor of Boston, has been in a little, what should we call it? Not a fight exactly, but a controversy with the federal government, because she wants all illegals to be safe in the sanctuary city of Boston. She doesn't want ICE there. In fact, Mayor Michelle Wu, in the little quote below her picture in this Boston Herald article on August 25th, Mayor Michelle Wu said Boston will, quote, continue to follow the law, unquote, after a ruling blocked the Trump administration's attempt to cut off funding from so-called sanctuary cities. Well, we'll see what the law amounts to once it gets to the Supreme Court, as I feel sure it will. U.S. Attorney General Pam Bonney had sent Boston officials a letter earlier in the month giving Wu a deadline to confirm the city's commitment to comply with federal law. Well, we will see. One of these left-wing judges said that the Trump administration could not enforce cutting funds. But we'll see where that goes. What else do we have here? ICE rolls out a brand new vehicle from its new fleet, which have some insiders feeling like they'll have a target on them. So there's a little worry there that maybe with these fancy vehicles with the word ICE printed right inside, it may expose them to violence. Well, what else do we have here? another article. Suffolk County Sheriff hanging on. This was in the Boston Herald, August 17th. Who exactly can remove Suffolk County Sheriff Steve Tompkins? I'll place him on suspension while he faces federal corruption charges. It says in the headline, Suffolk County Sheriff hanging on at who is running the place. And then we have one that says, where is indicted Sheriff Tompkins? So, as you can see, that's a big story up there. Now, a little humorous stuff from Howie Carr, a columnist for the Boston Herald. Dems, I don't give a bleep. Donald Trump has broken the Democrats. Maybe not forever, but right now they've lost it. If you don't believe me, check out the police body cam photos of local Democrats who've gotten a bad ice cube recently. Representative John, get off my lawn of Watertown. This means you. Hugging a lamppost on Beacon Hill to keep vertical. This is before you went to one of the indicted Democrat Sheriff Steve Tompkins jails. Oh, it hit some other things. And then we have Assistant Rhode Island Attorney General Devin Flanagan Hogan. This also means you screaming it at times. I'm an AG, this one. I saw on the internet a few days back. She said, I'm an AG, even though you're an assistant AG, or were. And judging from your lawn-like behavior in Newport, you should probably now be an AA. AAG. I'm an AG, you were screaming at the cops. I'm an AG. Good for you, says the cop. I don't give a bleep. Let's go. He doesn't give a bleep. Don't shoot him. He's wearing a body cam, he's sober, he knows he's being recorded, and he still doesn't care. He doesn't give a bleep. He just tells it like it is. And there's lots of other humorous things. Howie Carr is a regular writer for the Boston Herald. That appeared, let me see now, do we have a date here? Yes, that appeared August 20th. Another headline, Wu ignores tough issues while provoking Trump. Again, right now it seems like the governor is going into the background a little bit, judging from these, although I'm not up there to say for sure. Mayor Wu seems to be the big subject matter. And let's see now. Well, that's a quick summary. As I say, wish we had a little more time to go into some of these in more depth. But if you check out the Boston Herald online, you'll see a lot of these things. Now, let me see. I think we had time for at least a portion of one other article. Here's one. As I said last week, Elizabeth and I, when she was alive, used to go to Cracker Barrel sometimes. Haven't been there in a few years. They do a great business because it's right near the Chesapeake Bay Bridge. Very good location. Busy all the time. That's one reason we didn't go there too much. And also, it's a long distance. It's about 40 miles from my home. This is in the Washington Times. Cracker Barrel's problem is its food. By Seth Denson, Wednesday, August 27th. Again, let me jump down and get the highlights here. When the company quietly removed its longtime image of Grandpa leaning against a barrel from its logo, critics immediately labeled the move woke. After public backlash, Cracker Barrel reversed course Tuesday. Let's be clear. It wasn't woke, it was just stupid. A misguided, tone-deaf attempt to modernize a brand whose very appeal lies in nostalgia. I grew up in the South, still live there today. I don't go to Cracker Barrel for its mediocre biscuits and gravy. I can get those at IHOP. I go because it transports me back to great-grandmother's house, her front porch with rocking chairs, the farmhouse table set with mason jars, and a sense of simpler times. The only thing missing is her good cooking. That's the real problem for Cracker Barrel. Not the logo, not the decor, the food. Cracker Barrel isn't just facing criticism. It's battling the numbers. The razor-thin net profit margin of 1.65% and net income plunging nearly 59% year over year, despite flat revenue, is teetering on the edge. If history is any guide, those numbers are a warning flare. Well, we don't really have time. I see the clock is running out here. So I'll just read kind of a summary. If Cracker Barrel wants to remain relevant and avoid the fate of its peers, it must stop fiddling with surface-level changes and start fixing its foundation. The first step is to fix the food. There's no need to overhaul the menu. The core offerings are fine. What's lacking is the execution. Bring in real Southern culinary talent. Ditch that canned shortcuts and prioritize freshness and craft. Cracker Barrel customers aren't asking for kale smoothies or artisanal avocado toast. They're asking for biscuits that taste like someone's grandmother made them. And says the company must own its mistakes. In 2009, Domino's turned a crisis into a comeback by bluntly admitting our pizza sucked and we fixed it. Today, the pizza chain has nearly twice the market share of its nearest competitor, Pizza Hut. Cracker Barrel should take a similar approach, but lean into its Southern heritage, saying, we were raised better than this. We got lazy. Papa would be disappointed, but we've come back to our roots and we've fixed it. Well, that sounds like good advice. Well, thank you all for listening. This is Lou Caraboli. If you would like to write to me, again, the address is Lou, L-O-U, Caraboli, C-A-V-E-R-L-Y, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. Thanks for listening, and tune in again next week. Good night.